Okay, let's go ahead and get started. Thank you all so much for being here. That's my husband hooking in. Thank you all so much for being here this afternoon. Really appreciate your interest in this topic. And I'm going to begin by just telling you a little bit about myself. And then I'm going to talk for maybe about 30 minutes and share with you on this subject of emotional intelligence and church leadership and sort of how those two things intersect. And then what I'd like to do is open it up for a question and answer. Because my hope is that based on your own experience and what you've seen in the world of church and church leadership, that as I speak to you, you're going to have some insights and some things that pop. And hopefully we can kind of generate a little bit of dialogue around this topic. Okay, it's a huge topic, so we're not going to be able to exhaust it today, but maybe it'll just start a conversation. That's kind of my hope. So my name is Emily Spivey, and my husband and I are in church leadership and have been together for about 15 years now. We started here on the campus at Pepperdine with him being in worship ministry, and then he became a full-time preacher, and we've been in church leadership now for 15 years together as a married couple. I feel like my learning about church leadership, though, started long before that. I was born as a missionary kid, and for those of you who are familiar with the Let's Start Talking ministry, I grew up traveling all over the world with my parents as a young person, interacting with missionaries on the field, church leaders, groups of elders, and often I was like the kid in the corner, just sitting and listening to the dialogue and the conversations, to the conflict resolution, and to the way that church leaders went about this business that we call leading a church, whether it was a little mission church somewhere overseas, to later in life to a huge mega church in Dallas, Texas. Okay, so I wanted to just kind of share that background with you because I want you to know that my interest in this really came from my own experience in church leadership and witnessing what happens when people, right, when human beings take on this huge task of leading in God's church. And so I hope you'll find this really interesting today. So a few things for me around this topic happened at the same time about 2 years ago. My husband and I planted New Vintage Church, which is down in Escondido, California. And that was a new leadership experience for us. It was very intense. It was our first time going into a church plant. We had been in established churches for many years, and this was our first experience starting something from nothing, okay? And so that happened. About the same time, a few months later, I started my master's in organization development program here at Pepperdine, which, for those of you who don't know, is all about human behavior and how organizations function. And so I began studying that. And really, I started to become curious about how the things I was learning, how that would apply to the world of churches and church leadership. Okay? So this research that I'm going to share with you today, and I promise it's not going to be like boring research. I'm not going to give you a bunch of statistics or anything like that. But this was born out of my question, okay, around my own experience. Because as Tim and I got into the trenches with planting a church, what I quickly felt and realized was they don't prepare you for this in graduate school. Tim has a doctor of ministry degree. He's been very well educated. But they don't prepare you for the skills you need to build an organization. And that's really what starting a new church is. So I want to just lay out, the assumption that I'm working with this afternoon is that we all know that God builds a church. Okay, so I'm not refuting that. I'm not arguing with that. We all know that there is a huge supernatural, spiritual component to whether a church succeeds or not. So I'm not arguing with that at all. Okay, But we also, I think, could all agree that that the human side of it plays a big role. And that our ability to be equipped, to be trained, the skills we bring as church leaders make a big difference. Most of our training, at least historically in Churches of Christ, is a lot around biblical interpretation and theology, correct? And so our ministers come out and they know how to interpret a text, and they know their Greek and they know their Hebrew, but maybe don't have a lot of training in terms of starting an organization and what that looks like. Okay, so one of the elements of that would be emotional intelligence, and I'm going to just walk you through real quickly, kind of introduce you to this idea. First of all, how many of you would agree with this statement? Yeah, leading a church is messy. So we know that leading a church is messy, and I would say that increasingly it's very complex and fast-paced, that it's not quite as simple as maybe it was even 20 years ago, that the culture around us is dynamic, it's changing constantly, it's changing at a quicker rate because of technology, and people have many more options, and higher expectations. So there are all these factors that come into to leading a church. In general, it's messy. I like this picture because, to me, church is a little bit like this when you're trying to lead a church. You know, if you take like this green wire over here and this yellow wire, and you try to untangle them, what ends up happening half the time?
That's worse.
Right, you end up with a knot over on the other side, right? So you're trying to improve something and make it better, and in the process, you end up making something else worse. So church leadership is messy. It's complex. It's not simple. It's not 2 + 2 = 4. A + B = C. It's complex and messy. I would also kind of throw out there that leading a church requires more than just those traditional skills of knowing how to preach well, okay, having sound theology. And my experience and observation has been that by far the majority of the work that you do in church leadership, whether you're a minister, whether you're an elder, by far the majority of the work is dealing with the realities that exist below the surface. The people stuff, right, that are happening below the surface. Okay? So that requires different skills and different capabilities. Okay? And then lastly, that leading a church means building a community. Okay? And to me, this was crystal clear when you're starting a church from the ground up, because you can have a great vision and have a great sort of, you know, vibe and all sorts of things about your new church plant. You can be preaching the gospel with conviction. You can have all the best intentions in the world. But in the end, you have to be able to get people to want to join and follow you, right? And really, that's true in all of our churches, isn't it? Because people have choices. And increasingly, they feel the choice to, you know, go to church, or maybe they feel more freedom not to go to a traditional church or an institutional church. They have choices as to what kinds of church they attend. And so increasingly, leaders need the capability not just to know Bible, to teach the right things, but to really, truly build a followership. So I'm going to use that word followership, okay? Which just basically means inspiring commitment, cultivating trust, getting people to buy into what you're doing in your local church, right? Where they're excited about it and they want to come and participate in what you are doing in that place, okay? So building followership requires different skills, different capabilities. Okay, so the research that I did was on emotional intelligence, and I got really curious about how does this idea of emotional intelligence, what role does it play in actually building a healthy church and church growth? Does it make a difference if the leader, and in our case, I was specifically looking at church planters, does it make a difference if they have high emotional intelligence or not? Okay, my gut said, yeah, of course it does. But I really wanted to measure it and look at it and look more in depth at why that is and what role emotional intelligence plays. So real quickly, I'm just going to show you the model. This is the emotional intelligence model that I used for my research. And one of the things I want to point out to you here is that I think a lot of us, when we hear emotional intelligence, what do you guys think of when you hear emotional intelligence? What's the first thing that comes to your mind?
Compassion.
What else?
People skills.
Sympathetic. Yeah, sympathetic. Good. So that's exactly what most people think of, which actually is really just one little element on this wheel. So emotional intelligence is actually a lot more sort of full-bodied than most of us think. Most of us think of empathy. We think of being in tune with others. We think of sort of sympathetic, okay, sort of the softer skills. But actually, emotional intelligence is a little more full-bodied than that, and it's a little more, I would say it's a little tougher than that, okay? So as you can see here, it includes things like stress management and decision-making, self-expression, which in many cases has to do with feeling a strong sense of independence, having assertiveness, okay? Self-regard, which would be sort of this belief in oneself, and your own abilities and your own sense of purpose in life. Okay, and then if you look under like decision making, you've got things like impulse control. Okay, so when we think about emotional intelligence, and I mean, I could spend a whole hour just going over this with you, and we could really have a dialogue about that. But one of the things I want to just emphasize here as we look at the model, a couple of things. One is that if you think about this wheel sort of like a tire, okay, to really be a highly emotionally intelligent person, you want to have a nice round tire on your vehicle, okay? You don't want to have a flat tire. So a lot of emotional intelligence, being a truly highly emotionally intelligent person, has to do with being balanced, okay? When I do assessments with leaders and look at their emotional intelligence scores, usually what we'll see is that there will be one or two little categories in here that are sort of out of balance with others, right? Maybe they're really high on assertiveness and independence, but low on empathy, okay? So that can lead to some problems in your leadership. Maybe they're really high on empathy and interpersonal, and they just feel and care and connect with everybody, but they're not assertive or and have low independence or assertiveness, which means they can't differentiate themselves and ever stand up to anybody. So they're constantly being pulled by how everybody else feels, and they're never, it kind of pulls them off mission because they're not able to kind of stick to their guns. Okay? So emotional self-awareness. Maybe they're very aware of their own emotions, in tune with themselves, but their interpersonal is low. So they're all in tune here, but they have no clue what's going on with you, and they read all those signals wrong. Okay, so you can see those are just a couple of examples how things can be a little bit out of whack. Okay, so the balance is important. Okay, and again, as I say, it tends to be tougher. And I would say especially in church leaders, the research that I did showed that especially church planters tend to be really high in self-regard, in assertiveness, independence, okay? Because especially in those first 3 years of a church plant, when all the odds are stacked against them and they're fighting for every Sunday, you know, and you're just really in the trenches, you have to have that really strong sense of self-regard, that I'm going to keep moving forward. I believe this is going to succeed, even if everything around me looks like we're going to fail. Okay? Okay, so this is the model that I worked with. I'm not going to go into the details of the research. If you're interested in it, come talk to me. I'm happy to share it with you, email it to you, whatever. But what I found was we looked at a statistical correlation, and we did interviews. And what we found was that there's a really significant correlation between high emotional intelligence and growth in attendance. I looked at church plants in the first 3 years because those are sort of, that's the critical window of time, okay, to kind of, usually if a church makes it 3 years, it will continue, it will survive. So that's sort of the mortality rate, is that first 3 years. And we found that that there's it was clear as day, significant correlation between EI and growth. The other thing we found was that self-perception is sort of the core of emotional intelligence. So that's sort of the foundation, the beginning. So if a leader lacks self-perception, self-awareness, then they're probably not going to be, you know, they're going to be really out of whack, and they're not going to be effective in these other areas, okay? So as you think about it and reflect on yourself, think about emotional intelligence as sort of this two-way street. It's being aware of your own emotional makeup and information and emotional processes that happen with you as a leader, and then it's being aware of other people's emotional makeup and the information that you get from other people at an emotional level, okay? Being able to read it accurately, being able to use it in a productive, effective, healthy way, not reacting to it in an unhealthy way. Okay, so what I'm going to do, what I identified in my research was 7 key roles that emotional intelligence plays in effective leaders. So again, I was looking at church planters, okay? So it's a little bit, slightly different maybe than leading in an established church, a little more intense. But I really believe, just based on our own experience in church leadership, that this really can apply at a broader level to leadership in general. And so I'm going to share those with you, and then we can talk about maybe how that applies. Okay, the first one is this idea of reading the room. Is that a phrase that's familiar to you guys, reading the room? Yeah, it was really interesting when I talked to my church planters. They were all like, oh, yeah, you got to be able to read the room. It was like they all knew that phrase, and I think that that's something that that we all think of, like you said, when we think of emotional intelligence. So reading the room is really this idea of being able to gauge where people are at, where you're, and specifically in a church context, where your followers are at, where your members are at. So I'm not going to read through the quotes. You can see them there. But this is a really important skill and capability for what I would call like a visionary leader or an inspirational leader. Because you are in your leadership decisions, and it really ties into decision making, which we'll talk about in a minute. But in your decisions, there's a lot of really knowing where people are at any given time and being able to dial into that and being able to read it accurately. Okay? I'm sure we all know people that seem to be clueless to the people around them, right? It's like they don't pick up on all the signals that they're getting from their audience, from their group, from their team, whether it's their staff team or the elder team. So this is a really important skill. Interestingly, this also has sort of a predictive side. So as you can see in that quote on the far right, sometimes it's kind of thinking ahead to how do I think our church will take this if we move forward with this staff hire, if we move forward with this big decision as an elder group, do I know our congregation well enough to know how they will respond, how they will react emotionally to this? Okay, remember we're talking about emotional information. How will they feel about this? Okay, and again, it doesn't always mean, oh, well, then we don't do it because people might be uncomfortable, right? But what it means is, okay, I know this is going to make people uncomfortable. Therefore, how do we as a leadership pastor them, you know, through that change in a healthy way? Okay, so it's using that information in a healthy way. So that's number one, reading the room. Number two is decision making. EI plays a huge role in decision making. Um, especially in a church plant, you know, you're making decisions constantly, and you have to make them quickly, usually, and decisively. Often it's in the midst of uncertainty, pressure, stress. And I would say that's true in various church leadership circumstances. Okay? So this has to do with problem solving. So do you, as a leader, do you actually pay attention to the emotional information you're receiving when you are solving a problem? Okay, so it's not just, oh, I'm a good problem solver, but it's, am I aware of the emotional information, ramifications that are happening, both in myself and in others? Okay, and am I able to think clearly? It goes back to reality testing, too, which is another one of those subcategories under decision-making in emotional intelligence. So reality testing is okay, I know I feel really strongly about this decision, but I'm going to check it against some hard data. I'm going to, you know, I feel really strongly that everybody wants to do this. Okay, maybe we should survey a few people, you know, and actually find out what's the percentage of people that really want to do this. Or, you know, something of that nature. So it's checking your gut feelings, your assumptions, and your emotions against real data to either verify or refute what you're feeling, okay? And then impulse control plays a huge role in this decision making. And that's that restraint, okay? The ability to tolerate discomfort and be non-reactive, okay? I don't know about you, but in church leadership, do you ever feel like people, you know, half the people in your congregation are pressuring you to do one thing, the other half are pressuring you to do something else? Maybe as a minister, you got elders pressuring you, okay? So there's a lot, there are many circumstances in leadership where you feel emotional discomfort, okay? And it's so easy as a leader to just do something, take some action, any action, just to relieve your own discomfort, right? So this is, impulse control would be, instead of doing that, reacting, having the restraint, okay, to pause and to make wise decisions based on what's happening around you. Okay, the next one is hard leadership. And this is really leading through a crisis, okay? Whether it's personal brokenness, interpersonal conflict or stress, or just general stress in the church. Stress tolerance was a big one that was mentioned in our interviews, okay? And mostly because if you've planted a church, have any of you in here planted a church? Are any of you church planters? Yeah, good. Yes. So those of you who have planted a church know it's stressful, right? There's a lot of different stressors all happening at once. Usually there's financial stress. There's the stress of, you know, whether people are going to show up each week. A lot of times there's stress about where are we going to meet and uncertainty there, okay? So stress is huge, and being able to lead others and continue to inspire others, okay, despite stress or conflict, is a really important capability. The other one is leading through your own crisis, okay, or your own personal pain. And actually, my husband's going to be doing a class Thursday and Friday, and Elkin's more on that topic. But I think, you know, one of our most, I would say, consistent experiences in ministry is that whatever personal pain you're going through, you still have to get up and lead, right? Mm-hmm. Every Sunday, in between the Sundays, you still have to get up and try to get the gospel out there and inspire people to be a part of this thing we're doing together called church, right? So having the fortitude and the ability to do that without imploding, without burning yourself out, without just shutting down emotionally, okay? But being able to kind of figure out how to handle your emotions well while still consistently leading others, that hard is what I would call hard leadership. okay? And emotional intelligence plays a big role in that. Okay. The next one, risk-taking. This is number four. Risk-taking. This is having both the assertiveness and the independence to take important leadership risks, including the ability to both express entrepreneurial leadership and take risks, while simultaneously inspiring others to take risks as well. Okay? So part of what I saw in my interviews, part of churches that grow is they take strategic risks. And they're not afraid to do that. Their leaders aren't afraid to do that. They realize that that's part of getting to the next level, whatever that next level is. And so they have that inner courage to do that, the assertiveness to do it, and also the ability to sort of bring others along with them, okay? So for members of a church, when the leadership is about to take a big risk, that could be very scary, right? So there's this ability not only as the leader to say, we're going to take this risk, but also to inspire confidence in the people around you to take that risk with you. Okay? For church planters, this is was especially came out in the area of financial stability, whether it was, getting investors, getting people to help fund their church plant, whether it's getting loans from banks, doing capital campaigns in a church and trying to raise funds from people that you've only, you know, been gathering together for a year, you know. And asking people to take that risk and invest in the church at that point in its infancy. So risk-taking, that's a big one, that emotional intelligence plays a role. Okay. Leadership and self and others. Okay, so I really liked this one, and I felt like the conversations around this one was really important because a lot of when I talk to these church planters, and many of them that I talked with have now, I mean, they've been at their churches for 10, 20 years now and have grown them into large churches. So most of them now, as I talk to them, they're not in a small church plant anymore, okay? But they started that church from the beginning and grew it. Almost all of them said, you know, you in those early years, you need to be able to build other leaders. You have to be able to build leadership skills in other people while simultaneously kind of sustaining your own effective leadership, okay, over the long term. So it includes both empowering leaders around you, okay, and cultivating leadership in those around you, and having the self-perception to know kind of where your own limitations are and where you need to reach out to somebody else to cover up a limitation that you've got or to meet a need that you're not capable of meeting, okay? So there's a little bit of, again, that self-awareness, self-perception. You could even say, you know, humility there, right? So it's saying, I'm confident in my leadership, I'm pouring into other people, but I'm aware that I'm limited. I'm just one person, or we're just five guys. You know, we can't do everything ourselves. I can't do everything myself. I'm not good at everything, you know. So I've got to invest in people around me, right, and pour into them. Or I've got to realize, okay, I've hit a spot where I don't know how to do this, so I've got to learn, right? Or I've got to develop that in myself. I've got to reach out and ask for help. Okay? Okay. Six is interaction with others. This is the one that most of us think of as interpersonal relationships, building membership, developing trust with people. That didn't finish on the slide. I'm sorry. But really that empathy. So being able to connect with others, to develop deep relationships with other people, And for most of our church planters, this really played out on their staff team, okay, and the team that they're building around them. So it was important in the church as a whole, but if we're a growing church, a lot of it is about, in the early days, building that strong team of staff, okay, around that lead church planter. Okay, and the last one is trust. Okay, emotional intelligence plays a huge role in building trust. And I think this is probably one of the biggest ones, and I think there's a lot more that we could look into here with trust, okay? But if you think about starting something new from the ground up, or church in general, church leadership in general, okay? At the foundation of everything, people have to have trust in the leadership, right? So if you're leading a church, they have to be able to trust you. So trust is pretty complex, but it comes, if we're talking about emotional intelligence, it comes first from sort of that self-expression. I would even say vulnerability often. So a leader being able to get up and be authentic and real, to express who they truly are to the people around them, okay, engenders trust in their membership, okay? Also flexibility. Okay, and I thought this was interesting in building trust. Because what flexibility means is that if you and I are disagreeing and you have a different opinion, I have the flexibility to be open to a different answer than I might have come up with, right? I'm going to listen to you and I'm going to trust you, okay, as an intelligent person, as a someone who can participate in this conversation, and we can have a dialogue, and that engenders trust, because people are more willing to give trust if they feel like they are also the recipients, that you trust them also, okay? So it's a little bit of a two-way street, but it's building this idea of trust, whether that's, again, on a leadership team, whether it's in the church as a whole, okay? So those are sort of the seven roles that we identified in the research that it plays. So here are sort of the conclusions that we came to. The first is that certainly church planting really requires emotionally intelligent leadership. I would argue that all church leadership really requires some emphasis on emotional intelligence, and that it tends to be underdeveloped in most of our leaders, whether they're elders, whether they're preachers, okay, whatever that leadership role is. And I think there could be a lot more emphasis on developing emotionally intelligent teams, okay, where not only am I am able to work on my emotional intelligence as an individual, but then we're creating a culture in our leadership, in our churches, of emotional intelligent leadership, okay? So that's a big one. I think the second one, that self-perception and awareness, is the foundation, okay? And it's measurable, you know? So there's this idea, I think often we think of something like emotional intelligence as sort of soft and fuzzy and, you know, it's not really all that, it doesn't make that big of a difference. And I think what the research is showing is that it makes a huge difference. It makes a significant difference that we can measure statistically in growing churches. Not to mention that I think emotionally intelligent leaders are going to truly remain healthier and be more sustainable over a long period of time. So their leadership is going to last longer because they're healthier at this emotional level. Okay. Number three was really interesting as I talked and interviewed with the participants in the study. Every single one of them, when they realized that there was an emotional intelligence kind of capability or skill that they lacked, how they responded, and again, these are effective church leaders that have been successful at growing churches, is they reach out and find a mentor, a coach, a program, something, a resource, someone or something where they can grow in that area, okay? So effective leaders don't just kind of go, oh, well, you know, I just, you know, that's just not my strength, you know. And they don't just think, oh, we can just solve it all in here. I can just solve it all if I just kind of, I can figure it out all by myself. Okay, really truly effective leaders that are growing churches, when they reach a limitation in themselves and their own emotional intelligence, they reach out. And often they look to mentors was the number one place to ministers that have more experience or that have also had successful thriving churches, other leaders, okay, that have kind of walked their path before them. So I thought that was really interesting because, again, it's that it's one of those behaviors that it also demonstrates how emotionally intelligent they are, right? Because they have that self-awareness to realize their limitation, and they have the humility to reach out and to seek input. Okay, and then the last one, emotional intelligence is tougher than we thought. I think especially for men. I just worked with a team of executive-level men back in January. They're in a church setting, in a Christian setting, and they... you know, this, when I walked in the room at first, they were all kind of like, oh, you know, they're talking about, are we going to really talk about emotions all day? You know? Yeah, I mean, that was truly, I'm not kidding at all. That was the tone. That was the vibe in the room. By the end of the day, they were just blown away, and I got emails later that week on Thursday and Friday, oh, I'm still thinking about what we worked on, and I just, you know, I never realized this about myself, but now I, you know, I get it, you know? And it was just amazing how even in just one day how these men, you know, because I think especially with guys, often they're not used to taking the time to think about it. You know, they don't spend time thinking about how they feel about stuff. Because generally they've been conditioned, guys have been conditioned that that's not productive, it's not a waste of time, that emotions tend to pull you off track. Not that they could possibly be an important source of wisdom for your leadership. Okay? So one of the messages I kind of want to just give you today is that it's not just the touchy-feely stuff. It's the stronger stuff as well, that fortitude, that courage that leaders need in a church leadership context. Okay? So, here. Okay. So let's just go ahead. Let's do questions, and then I'll go to that last slide after we're done. But questions. Yes.
Good question. I'm curious. The reason to present this kind of information then assumes that we can grow in our emotional intelligence by being self-aware that we need to grow. Am I getting that? What would you recommend to go? What pathways to maybe I first identify weaknesses and second address them?
Yeah. Good. Good. Great question. So what we know about emotional intelligence is that it's different than, like, just personality, okay? For years and years and years, we thought that things like personality, emotional intelligence, that it's all kind of hardwired and just sort of this is who I am. Or maybe you could change it when you're little, but once you're an adult, you're pretty much sort of just stuck the way you are, right? What we know now, and a lot of this is due to just all the most recent technology in the way that we can observe the brain and how the brain works, is that emotional intelligence is something that can be developed. I will say that based on just my observations so far, that it does seem like some people just naturally have more than others, right? So I think there's sort of a baseline. People start sort of at different points, or maybe if you go back to the wheel, you know, they start with strengths and weaknesses, but it definitely can be something that's developed. There are a ton of resources out there for assessing your emotional intelligence. I use the EQI. That's the assessment I tend to use. But there are others. There are also a lot of resources in terms of developing and working on your emotional intelligence. So I think for an individual, a lot of it ends up looking like some kind of coaching. You know, you can do seminars and things and learn some basic skills and things to improve, but I think as a leader to really improve and work on your emotional intelligence, because it's going to be individual for different people. It's going to be specific to the skills and the capabilities that you need to work on. Yeah. Does that answer your question?
It does. My mindset would then have, you know, assessment tools, identify weaknesses, and find leaders that are good, and then just say, hey, help.
Yeah, well, I think it's both up. And. So I think, you know, to me, this information can be used in sort of a predictive way, okay? So I think it's really important for, like, hiring processes, right? When we think about hiring preachers, okay? Or when we think about going out there and looking for who are the best young church planters, potential church planters out there. I think this is really important to take into consideration because what we've seen is that it makes a difference, right? And so to me, it makes sense to use this kind of information in that process. Not only do you have the education and master's degree, but how emotionally intelligent are you, right? And really look at that. I also think, though, that that it's a great sort of think about it more in a just an ongoing leadership development kind of way, okay? Because I think, to me, the good news is that you can take any leader, okay, in any context, and with some intentionality and some good tools, they can improve. You know, they can grow. And to me, that's so exciting because, yeah, because I just think it's empowering for our churches. I think it's empowering for us as individuals to realize that that we can grow in the areas where maybe we're a little bit weak or out of balance when it comes to emotional intelligence. Yeah.
So aside from the, we're going to have an emotional intelligence seminar this weekend, what are some ways that you, as leaders, you can sort of teach or build, grow emotional intelligence either for your congregation or for your group that you're working with without necessarily being a specific seminar, but just sort of ongoing tools that you can use?
Sure. Okay, well, obviously, you know, there's a lot of information out there. So one piece, I would say, is just becoming familiar with the concept, okay? And becoming familiar with just sort of what it is, beyond just sort of the anecdotal, you know, because, again, I think most people, when you think of emotional intelligence, they immediately just think, oh, you're really empathetic. You're really a people person. And so, and that's what that means. So I think having a really educated understanding of what all it entails is one piece. I think that there are a lot of smaller things you can do. So I think self-awareness is a big one. So something like learning to be more reflective, whether it's in your staff meetings. And you're starting a staff meeting, okay? Building in time to be more reflective about what is everybody experiencing and talking and listening to each other about it, rather than just like jumping right into the work, which is what most meetings are like, right? I think there are a whole bunch of things you can do that are sort of, you know, out there in the world. They're kind of categorized as mindfulness, you know? But I actually think in my mind, it ties in with sort of the ancient Christian practice of examine, right? So this idea of examining, turning your mind's eye inward, and examining your own, what's going on inside you emotionally at any given moment. So, for example, say you walk into a staff meeting, or an elders meeting, we'll make it an elders meeting. So you walk into an elders meeting, and you sit down, and you know, the conversation gets going and you're talking about, you know, some issue, okay? And as the conversation goes on, you know, you're listening. Maybe you've interacted some. But then at some point you realize, okay, or maybe you don't realize it right now, but you decide, I'm going to pause and turn my attention inward for a moment and think about, okay, how do I feel right now as this is going on, right? What is my body telling me? What kind of physical signals am I experiencing? Right? Okay, well, turns out maybe now that you stop and pay attention to it, you have a really kind of aching headache back here in the back of your neck. You've got kind of a knot in your stomach, you know? And so then the next step is kind of you go, okay, so what's that about? Because that's emotional information. That's you're feeling something, but it's expressing itself in a physical way, okay? Because then once you can identify, this is what I'm feeling, then it's information. You know something that before you were just going along, and then maybe 30 minutes into the elders meeting, you react and you say something really dumb because you've been sitting there for 30 minutes experiencing all this emotion that you haven't really, it's not in your conscious awareness yet, right? Okay, so that's just an example. So there are a lot of just kind of practices that you can incorporate that are really easy, that are really just, you know, with just kind of knowing how to do them, that you can, that can make a difference, you know, pretty quickly. Okay, so that would be one example. Yeah.
And this might be outside of your research framework. I guess my question is, taking into account the fact that a traditional Church of Christ setting is typically more eldership leader driven as opposed to minister leader driven, yeah, which may be in other denominations. In your experience, where you've got ministers or a ministry team that may be higher in EI, mm-hmm, and a group of elders that may be lower in EI, can you still see, maybe I should turn my name card around.
Can you still see,
I mean, and not taking away from God's ability to bless right. the situation, can you still see success and growth in that situation? Do you have suggestions for the two groups dealing with each other?
Yeah.
That type of thing.
Well, so, I mean, I think obviously you can't make people want something they don't want, right? But I do think if this is something that, for example, the staff team is really committed to, and they started implementing some things and modeling some things, I think that's a place to start. I think introducing some maybe small non-threatening practices into their interaction with the elder group, could be a place to start. I mean, yes, I do think in an ideal situation, yeah, I mean, you could get those elders and get that staff and get them all away together for a Saturday and do some really great, introduce some really great new things about how they could potentially work together, if they were open to that. So, yeah.
Real briefly, is there a book that you might recommend to take the next step to flushing out how you would develop and improve emotional intelligence?
Sure. Daniel Goleman is one that I would look at. You can just Google him. He has actually several books out. Has a really
what was it?
Daniel Goleman, G-O-L-E-M-A-N. He's probably the main place I would send you. Just a ton of resources there. Yeah.
Is there relational stuff from the EQ outside? Like in like a book form or something like that?
Is there what?
Like a way of getting all this stuff like in book form? Or
yeah, you can. So again, if you want to look at the EQI assessment, you just Google it. Yeah, they have website. They have the whole model there. Okay, so the guy that came up with this particular model, his name is Reuven, R-E-U-V-E-N, Baron. There's also two guys. Their last names are Salove and Mayer. That are kind of thought leaders. So, there's kind of a few different streams of thought, you know, like any kind of big academic concept, right? There's a few different streams of thought. So, they have sort of, there are a few slightly different models of emotional intelligence and what that looks like. The differences are fairly insignificant, you know. In general, they're fairly similar. Okay. Yeah.
Isn't the Bible, when you start out as a little person growing up, isn't the Bible already developing your emotional intelligence? And when you get to be an elder in the church, you're demonstrating those emotional intelligence you have picked up through life.
Yeah. Well, I would hope so. Absolutely.
Well, so you're working on people who are deficient in the Bible.
Well, I would say that we're all imperfect, and we're all having room for growth.
It's too simple.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, thank you all so much for your attention. Really appreciate it.